Hello everyone, welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast, live from the pool car, well recorded live, live in Peterborough, and hopefully with a better mood than when we were discussing the Southampton defeat, although a worse result, it's fair to say. My name is Michael Bailey, I'm with Paddy Davitt as normal. Pad, how are you? We're on the way back from Newcastle, it was a heavy one.
Yeah. In a lot of senses, mate, yeah. We'll try and keep it positive, try and keep the perspective that Alec Neil was demanding at the full-time whistle, but, yeah, on the back of Leicester as well, not kind of the result they wanted to following the international break, was it? Or the performance?
No, back-to-back defeats in the Premier League, which is something you always want to avoid as well. Obviously, we don't want to be hammered for being overly positive and not asking those tough questions.
Okay, fair enough.
So we will, of course, unlike normal, try to be objective about the whole thing. But a 6-2 defeat. Now, for me, it wasn't a no-show. Norwich were good going forward. They created two goals. They hit the post twice. They had an attacking threat. There was a spell in the start of the second half when they were 3-2 down, of course, but looked like they would get back into the game, possibly. But defensively, I suppose it was a no-show because they were absolutely all over the place.
Yeah, well, that's how the manager broke it down. Two parts to the analysis, wasn't it? But well, for me, it's everything you reeled off in an offensive kind of positive on the balance sheet. It's irrelevant because if you can't defend, and I think we have to make the distinction, we're not just talking about defenders, it's, you know, it is a collective, and the way they just parted for goals, well, 3, 4 and 5, which were just turnover, counter-attack, bang, bang, goal, on the back of Leicester's winner, which again was a counter-attack, and you could even say their first goal came from a counter-attack, quick turnover, deeply concerning, really, and if they continue in that fashion, then it's going to be a very bumpy ride ahead. So for me, it's almost like the attacking upside is irrelevant, because if you're going to go away or home for that matter and handicap yourself in the way you can see goals, then you know, you don't need to be Alec Neil and inside the game to know that's not a recipe that's going to keep them in the division.
No, we've got sort of new patterns now. Long gone are the days of old just conceding sloppy goals from set pieces. I mean, as you mentioned there, there's a pattern now of teams not being too worried about Norwich having a healthy amount of possession and hitting them hard on the counter, which I suppose is a debate as to whether, as games go on, a few sides are picking up on Norwich's major weaknesses. Norwich have now conceded more goals than anyone else in the top flight from, you know, a run of fixtures, a start, which obviously has had tough games, but it's a lot of big sides they haven't played as well. So there's there's a few things to get worried about, really, in that lot, isn't there?
Well, there is now. I mean, as I say, it is such a short-term, you know, filter that you look through, particularly in the Premier League as well, where it's the saturation coverage and, you know, if you're in it, it's the only place to be. If you're outside it, it's the only place to try and get into. So, you know, it is difficult to retain a bit of a balanced outlook on life, particularly after the manner of that defeat. But, you know, they are frittering away. Well, it was a solid start. I don't think it was anything more than that because, you know, I've said it numerous occasions, they've leaked 4 points for me, the Stoke game with Butland's heroics. But they still should have got their noses in front, and then the West Ham equaliser at Upton Park. So if you're on 13 points from 9 games now, then you can, you know, you can take what's happened in the last 2 games a little bit more comfortably than if you're on now a point a game ratio, which would still probably get the job done, but it'd be a far more fraught passage for the remainder of the season. So at the minute, the curve is bending downwards. That's the worry, that it is only basically, it's not about how well they played against Crystal Palace on the opening day now, or how vibrant they were at Sunderland, albeit a poor Sunderland, you know, a week or two after that. Really, it is all about, you know, Leicester and Newcastle and more pertinently, probably West Brom now.
Yeah, even several weeks ago when people were talking about, you know, it's a good start, especially maybe we've only just lost points here and we should have kept hold of these points, and you can't talk about the points that you didn't get because it's completely irrelevant, and you then forget the points that you've maybe picked up that you were fortunate to in some way. So it gets gets a bit hit and miss at that point. But it's really difficult to work out where to start on analysing the game. And we need to get home, so we're not going to make it too long a podcast, to be brutally honest. But both sides were as bad as each other in the first half, and maybe Newcastle were able to tighten up in the second. Is that fair enough? I mean, they scored all six of their shots on target, and I think Norwich had six and obviously scored twice.
Yeah, well, I mean, they were far more clinical. They had the standout front man on the pitch in Wijnaldum for certain, and probably the standout player for me in Sissoko, albeit, you know, I can understand that one or two people point out to me on Twitter that he probably was culpable in letting Martin Olsen run unmolested, as it were, for the two assists for their goal, Norwich's goals. But I think on balance he was head and shoulders the best midfield player on the park, and then that set the tone, really. But I don't think Norwich helped themselves. I mean, I distinctly recall in the first 10 minutes John Ruddy missing about with the ball at his feet instead of clearing it, and Perez almost closed him down. And he did eventually get it clear. But all that does is get the crowd back up, and also those players who clearly were desperate to get on the front foot after the season they've had and the pressure they were under. You could sense that. Why give them any encouragement? And then literally 5 or 10 minutes later, the sea parts and they just started leaking poor goals. And once you're letting in goals, it doesn't matter if it's a team who haven't won a game all season. They're going to gain confidence from that, and that's what you saw, really. They just made it too easy for them, and that's the frustration, that Norwich were basically a soft touch, and it needs to stop. You know, they need to get far more ruthless edge in both boxes, and if they don't, then, you know, they're going to be good to watch. And that phrase that was appearing all over Twitter about one for the neutrals, then great, they might be the neutrals' favourites, but if that means they're back down in the Championship, well, that's not. That's not really what anybody with a Norwich connection is particularly bothered about, is it? You know, serving up, I think that was the highest scoring Premier League game of the season, I believe. following on from, obviously, Southampton, where there was plenty of goals that day. And unfortunately, on both occasions, Norwich have looked sadly naive.
Yeah, the people watching Norwich on Sky must have a very interesting perception. There's so many little things I want to pick up on. I mean, I think John Ruddy getting down to, was it Wijnaldum's header for the second goal? I think it seemed, yeah, it seemed a bit of a struggle for him to get down to it. Nathan Redmond's tracking back for the third goal from Jose Perez. He ran, but he wouldn't have ran. It wasn't running as quickly as if he was going in the other direction, put it like that, when Sissoko was breaking.
Particularly as it seemed he lost the ball in the first place.
Yep, absolutely. With, what, 6-7 players up in the penalty area?
Yeah.
Which again underlines maybe Norwich's overcommitment. You mentioned John Ruddy when he was sort of faffing around at the back, and we're fortunately very close to the dugout, and I saw Alec Neil turn around, just go, say to the dugout, why are they doing that? As if it's the players' decisions on the pitch. It's not instructions necessarily from the manager. I'm sure he'd want them to pick and choose the moments when they're doing that sort of stuff, rather than getting themselves in trouble. So, you know, the player's own decisions on the pitch have to come under question at that point. So, yeah, lots of little things. And I think the fourth goal, was it? Or the fifth? I lost track by the end of Mitrovic's goal, originated from Newcastle in their own corner, by their own corner flag, effectively, as well as the goal was crafted. So, if I was to ask you for the one positive from Sunday's game?
Simple. Mbokani.
Yeah.
Without a shadow of a doubt, you know, there's been a groundswell for him to start in the Premier League now. And he showed enough there that, hey, he can score goals now on the back of the goal against Leicester as well. That the guy will score if he gets the service that Martin Olsen was delivering. Then the physicality of him as well, you know, he was good outside the box as well. He offers an aerial presence, and he might not have the athleticism of a Jerome or a Grabham, but I'm sorry, at the minute, his skill set I'd take all day long, because they look like they're going to score goals with him at the point of the attack. So, and Alec Neil said as much as well. He was very impressed with him. So I think it's safe to say, injury permitting, between now and Saturday, he'll be leading the line.
What other points did we miss? Johnny Howson's penalty shout. I mean, in the first half, the game was still reasonably tight, I think, at that point, possibly. Certainly weren't four goals behind. Ball comes across to the far post. Howson's shirt's pulled. I mean, I thought it probably was a penalty, because he looked like he was there to sort of head home had he not been pulled.
Yeah, well, yeah, no. It was, you pull a shirt in the box and maybe you get away with it more often than not, but you conversely do see them given. Unfortunately, I think the position in the referee, he was blindside of, was it Colaccini, was it, I think? So, you know, he wasn't in the position to give it, and his assistants weren't obviously seeing it either. So, and there was the offside shout for the fourth goal, I think, the one that Wijnaldum completed his hat-trick.
Yes, indeed. Which is a fair shout. And the one thing we haven't talked about that we really should do, the actual substitution. City 3-2 down, but playing well in the second half, chasing the goal. Alec Neil decides to bring Alex Tetti off for Wes Houlihan. I think we've had this discussion, haven't we? The question mark is not whether Wes could have come on, but whether there were three or four other midfielders that may have been defensively less fundamental to Norwich keeping Newcastle out.
Yeah, no, and the manager himself, hands straight up in the air post-match. He got it wrong. That was the wrong call. You don't need hindsight to see that. I mean, it's worth caveating that Tete was in the side when they scored the third goal from a counter-attack, and I believe he was on the pitch when Leicester scored twice from counter-attack. So, you know, he's not the magic bullet, but he is, by Neil's own admission, the one-in-a-kind player who does that screening role. And it was just a strange decision, given they were on top in the first 15 minutes of the game. You know, why take off Alex Tete, given that Newcastle are a counter-attacking side and they'd already shown that in the first half? Surely you'd need a little bit of protection, because inevitably that's how the main threat was going to come from. And, you know, the ruthlessness of the Premier League meant within 3 or 4 minutes of Houlihan entering the fray, they'd score twice and that was the game done. For me, that's the biggest concern, really, that, you know, we forget because of the success the man has had, but he is a very young man making his way, Alex Neil, in the management game, and he's learning in a very deep waters now. And I think he's, you know, to a degree, he's been found out in the last two games by his counterparts. And he needs to be as fast a learner as his players. And but the thing is, he's proven himself, you know, beyond reproach for me so far in his Norwich career. So I'm pretty sure he'll go away. And in the cold light of day, you know, his probably brain was slightly scrambled on Sunday evening, but I'd imagine by this stage now, on a Monday afternoon or early part of this week now, he'll watch the analysis, he'll see what's gone wrong, and he'll set about putting it right. But in order to do that, then he needs the players to step up as well. There's just a collective abdication for me at the minute. You know, complacent, it's not the right word, but after the first 7 or 8 games, maybe they felt they could compete quite comfortably at this level, and they were picking up points and they were dominating games through possession, but they've had a very rude awakening either side of the international break, and that's why West Brom is now massive.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's lots of other things we could say about Newcastle and whether they were as bad as their position in the league suggested, because of course this is their first win. They've doubled the amount of goals they've scored this season now, but I think that will play out over the coming weeks, because I think they'll probably be picking up a few wins here or there, maybe not in the derby. Great stuff. Yeah, anyway, let's hear from the actual protagonist, shall we? Here's Russell Martin and City boss Alec Neil.
I think it's difficult, you know. I think conceding 6 goals is never nice, you know. I think everybody is really frustrated and disappointed. I think the game really sort of split into two, offensively and defensively. I thought offensively we looked a real threat, scored 2 goals, hit the post twice, could have scored some more. But defensively as a group, I thought we were poor, and we got hurt in sort of the counter-attack. We tried to force issue in the second half, really, the game at 3-2. I think at half-time it could have been 5 each, the way the game was going. But we knew we were going to come, they were going to be open, and it's one of them, do you try and sit in and defend that, or do you go and try and attack and see how the game sort of pans out? And at that stage with 3-2, I felt if we got the next goal, we could have went on and won the game. You know, I think we started the second half really well, but obviously we conceded that goal, and then I made the decision to take Alex off, because at that stage we're losing anyway, so there's no point in trying to sort of safeguard what you've got, because you haven't got anything, and it cost us a couple of goals after that. So I'll take responsibility for that, but I think the squad know and the players know they're going to have to take responsibility for the fact that as a group we didn't defend anywhere near well enough.
It was far too open, didn't start well enough, and it was just felt like when we in the transition when we lost the ball, felt like it could have opened up at any point, really opened us up at any point. We weren't good enough. We had some really good play up top end of the pitch, some good moves, good goals, created numerous chances, but we've let them create far too many, and they've punished us, and that's the ruthlessness of this league. But I felt even at 3-2 we'd shown character to get back in the game. It goes 4-2, we're still trying to search for a goal, and maybe we should, you know, be a little bit more solid and sort of wait for it to open up, because I still felt we were in the game at 4-2 even though they scored easy goals. But yeah, it's frustrating. You know, we defend and attack as a team, and you know, I'm sure we'll get plenty of stick this week, but from 1 to 11 it wasn't good enough, as simple as that, and we have to work on it. And Gafford spoke about it in the week as well, how important that would be when we lost the ball, or they lost the ball, and it was all going to be about the counter attack, and they've punished us today.
Okay then, so West Brom coming up, Pad. It's quite a big game now, isn't it? And I mean, we Norwich have to win. Clearly, nothing gets decided now. Obviously, I know there's a lot of games afterwards, but it could really do with 3 points. Losing back-to-back games, and they are winless in four. Although I know they played at West Ham and Liverpool in those.
Well, given where they go in the league after West Brom, I don't think there's too many even diehard Norwich fans will expect too much at Manchester City, other than another afternoon of painful watching. So, yeah, in that context, I think they do need to win. Not in terms of points and standings, as you say, it is very early days, but just belief and restoring a bit of confidence. You know, they might be the right characters, as Alec Neil said to me post-match yesterday, so there's no fears on that score. He'll get a response, but by the same token, when you've come off that pitch and you've shipped 6 goals and you know you haven't played very well at all defensively, that does fan the flames of self-doubt. So, you know, the sooner they get back on track, the better for all concerned, I think, because the questions will only start to grow again if West Brom come here and do a number on them. And unfortunately, I don't think the Tony Pulis side is who you'd pick to try and right the ship, as it were. So I don't think that's going to be a particularly pretty watch at Carr Road on Saturday, but it'll be all about the result. A, getting his team selections right, and B, setting them up right, because I think I'm fairly sure West Brom, another side who like to counter-attack with the pace of Berahino. So, you know, if they get done again in that sort of similar fashion, that'll be 3 games on the trot, and then you do begin to ask serious questions.
I think, West Brom are hit and miss away from home, which is maybe something Norwich can take advantage of. I also imagine they won't be playing Victor Anichebe as a holding midfielder, so I think this will be a different story to the cup game a few weeks back, but we'll see how it goes. And I suppose just finally, you know, there's a suggestion Norwich could make defensive changes in the actual back four. This is maybe the problem left over from August, isn't it? The two options are Andre Wisdom and Ryan Bennett as centre-backs, really.
For me, neither of them are particularly shown that the case is compelling to oust Martin and Bassong, and that really is a sad indictment of probably not what Norwich tried to do. We know they tried to get central defenders in. We know there was bids in. But the bottom line was that window closed. They had to go with what they already had in the building. And, you know, with each passing week now, that looks like there's not a lot in terms of cover or even defensive clarity at the minute. So, but as I say, right at the start, you know, for me, my timeline was full up with John Ruddy question marks, Stephen Whittaker question marks, Russell Martin question marks, Martin Olsen question marks. But it's not just the defensive, you know, if you're getting overrun from turnover ball in Newcastle's own corner flag, then you have to question the whole mindset of the midfielders, the strike players. It's a collective malaise without the ball at the minute, and that stems from the manager for me. So a hell of a lot of work to be done on the training ground this week. But yeah, if those lads in possession at the back aren't doing the business, and you quote the stat about how many goals they've shipped, then you might just need to freshen up, just to inject a little bit of, just a bit of positivity, really. Because the bottom line is now, if we get to Saturday evening and we're talking about another mistake from another in the back line, then you know that's not going to do anybody any favours then. But it's clear that, from what I can sense anyway, there's a lot of fans who aren't happy now with the back line as it stands, so that's a decision for Alec Neil. He's the man who gets paid to make those decisions. So if he thinks Wisdom and Bennett, for example, are better served in that back line, we'll see. But personally, I don't see that they're any better than who's already in there at the minute.
And on that note, we'll end this fine positive podcast. I think we've done.
You the one who wanted to take us down negativity street,
what?
Michael.
No, I just
was all for going positive.
well, we're going to go home. I hope you don't mind that. But all the usual stuff will be on during the week. As we've said, it will be West Brom come Saturday afternoon, 3 p.m. kickoff. We'll have the live coverage as usual, pinken.com. The presser will be on Friday, I'd imagine. So keep an eye on the EDP and Pinken websites and Mustard TV, of course, for all the updates on that and the usual shows. Until then, thank you very much, Pads.
No worries, Mike. Thank you.
Thanks all for listening. And we'll see you after West Brom, when the mood will no doubt be so bright.